Hello, welcome to Duchess the Podcast with me, the Duchess of Rutland. And we have a very special treat for you today. The date of recording this episode is the 7th of June 2022, and we've just enjoyed the most magnificent weekend of our Platinum Jubilee celebrations for our beloved Queen Elizabeth II. To start, we will have one of our favourite guests back on the podcast, Lady Derby of Knowsley Hall. We will then play some of our favourite clips from the podcast that have featured stories about the Queen and her family. So please do join me for this very special Jubilee episode. This is Duchess. I'm overjoyed, listeners, to be welcoming back Lady Derby. We were keen to do this not only because it was the first episode we ever recorded and it was one of our favourites, but because Lady Derby, perhaps more than anyone else on the show, is so connected with the Queen. In the following conversation, I asked Lady Derby about some of her favourite memories of the Queen and the royal family. And we discuss the wonderful celebrations that went on just this last weekend. I hope you enjoy. I want to start off by asking you, what did you do this weekend to celebrate the wonderful Platinum Jubilee?
Well, we've actually got our main celebration as an estate this afternoon because we felt very much that it was a bank holiday and so the families who work with us, they should be with their own families. As a family ourselves, we went down to London. We went to the Derby, which is named after the 12th Earl. We were all there as a family to celebrate. We also did the Oaks the day before. What it meant to me was just bringing everyone together. I mean, no one does pageantry better than the British. And it didn't matter what age you were, what nationality, everybody came together and just really celebrated the here and the now. And it was very emotional saying thank you to someone who's dedicated her entire life to the service of her country and the people in it. And I think what came out of it is just how lightly she's carried it. You know, Her Majesty seems to take duty so lightly. She carries the responsibility. One never feels it's a burden with her. It's a joy.
You put that beautifully. And you, beyond many of the people who I've interviewed on the podcast, Duchess, have had a lot of respect and admiration for the Queen. And also you've met her on numerous occasions at the Derby itself in Epsom. Can you share any of those memories with the listeners, or perhaps some of her horses coming in and winning the Derby? Have you ever witnessed that?
Well, unfortunately, the Queen has never won the Derby yet. She has won the Oaks, and it is one of her great ambitions. Like all of us, we all want to win the Derby because it's so prestigious as a race. But she's always so excited to be there, and she carries everybody with her with the enthusiasm for the sport. I mean, she's very, very important for the sport of racing in this country. After Edward was a page, you know, she would often come up to us in the paddock and, you know, she'd say, come along, Edward, come and see the horses with me. And they'd sort of wander off, really, just to talk about the horses, because they'd spent 5 years together chatting about racehorses while he was her page.
And what about your dear husband? Was he a page before his son?
No, he wasn't actually, but his father was.
So it runs again in the families, yeah. So Caddy, the Derbys have got a long and lustrous history with the royal family. Many members of the royal family, I believe, have come to stay with you at Knowsley Hall. Can you just bring our listeners up to speed with some of those members of the royal family?
Well, I suppose it all started with Thomas Stanley, who married first time Eleanor Neville, who was the sister of Warwick the Kingmaker. And that's a kind of neat tie-in with me because I'm a Neville too. And second time around, he married Lady Margaret Beaufort, who was this tremendous heiress, but she also happened to be the widow of Edmund Tudor and mother of Henry, Earl of Richmond, who later became Henry VII. So the first Countess of Derby was actually stepmother to King Henry VII. So he would regularly come and stay as king with his wife at Knowsley Hall. So there's always been that association from the 14 70s. Then with the Grand National, we've always had members of the royal family to stay with that. I've got a visitor's book here. This is the visitor's book from Knowsley. This is the Grand National in 1921. And we've got King George V with Queen Mary, then the Prince of Wales and the Princess Royal. So they came in a private capacity and also in an official capacity. Fast forward to this century, we've got lots of images when photography started happening. This is quite an interesting one. This is an early picture of Edward VIII when he came to Manchester, and he was godfather to the late Lord Derby, known to us as Uncle John, and also my husband. So my husband is actually godson of King Edward VIII, who, as we know, abdicated. Then we have the Queen's father, our present Queen's father and mother. That's them staying with the 17th Earl just there, and here staying with the 18th Earl.
Goodness.
And in 2002, we were the only private house that the Queen stayed in with the Duke of Edinburgh for the Golden Jubilee. And the Queen planted a tree to mark her stay. And there is, of course, the Duke of Edinburgh, her now known as her strength and stay, who was a wonderful, wonderful man.
And what do you remember vividly about that visit, Kazi?
I was just full of awe and amazement how hard they worked, because the Queen came to stay with us for 3 days and she brought 23 members of her household, including private secretaries, press secretaries. And it's the only time when I've really properly had a glimpse of their life of engagements. And it was boom, 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 morning, noon and night. And by the end, I was absolutely exhausted and they went on to the next visit. And I kept the children away because I didn't think they'd behave. I'm completely in awe of how little Prince Louis behaved during this Golden Jubilee pageant, because my son here, Edward, was the same age, 4, when the Queen came to stay. And on the last day, I let them come and have tea with the Queen, which was completely nerve-wracking, complete with maternity nurse and nanny, and just in case they misbehaved. And the Queen was completely adorable with them, and you could see how much she is a family person. And she said to Edward, "Would you like to go into my car?" And he immediately said, "I've been in it." So that was the end of that conversation. And then the Queen was sitting down, and he went and sat literally on her lap. And I said, "Oh, darling, you don't want to sit next door to the Queen like that. You know, give the Queen a bit of room. Give Her Majesty a bit of room." And he said, "I'm here and I'm not budging." And she was so divine, sort of peals of laughter, and then said, "Oh, you know, Charles Armstrong Jones was always quite a full-on character." So she completely diffused my nerves by saying that her nephew actually who's now the Earl of Snowdon.
Was your son with you for the Platinum Jubilee celebrations?
Yes, he was, because we went to the Derby together for the horse race.
And what amazed me about the celebrations we've all witnessed throughout the country, throughout the world this weekend, and the euphoria that we all feel as a nation, and I believe most probably, is watching how secure one feels about the future of our monarchy. Seeing the next generation, and the next generation, and the third generation all before us to carry that sword. The magic moment was for me most probably seeing Louis on Prince Charles's knee. I'm sure we've all got a magic moment, but that was a very special moment, wasn't it, Cassie?
Dancing up and down. Yes, that was adorable. I don't know how they managed to behave for so long so well, because it must have been a very long weekend for them. No one does pageantry better than the British, and I thought it was an enormous success and very emotional, just saying thank you to our monarch for 70 years of service. It didn't occur to me how emotional I would feel about celebrating and actually saying thank you. And that's what, you know, the Platinum Jubilee was all about, was saying thank you.
And seeing what service she's done through such a rich and wonderful life. Both you and Her Majesty, of course, are well known for your sense of fashion. How would you assess the Queen's influence on fashion? And has her sense of style influenced yours in any way?
Oh, goodness, yes. The Queen and Princess Margaret both had the most incredible figures when they were younger. They had tiny, tiny waists. And so the fashions of the 1950s really suited both of them, with the little waists and the full skirts, which you probably saw in the pageant when the women from the 1950s came with the rolled back hair. So in fact, the dress I wore for the Derby this year was that style, sort of fitted here and then flared. So I definitely look at the Queen and the fashion she's worn as inspiration when I'm picking my clothes out for Royal Ascot or the Derby. I mean, as well as within the confines of what you are meant to wear, there are certain things like for Royal Ascot, you're not meant to have bare shoulders and things like that. So it's a very good pointer how she dresses, what you should dress like for, you know, formal occasions.
And just tell us about the etiquette on gloves. If the Queen wears gloves, you should have them with you, but not wear them.
It's a sort of past generational thing. If you look at anybody, I mean, my mother-in-law and my mother, when they went out shopping, they would wear a hat and gloves. It was just what they did. It was less supermarkets. You went to the greengrocer and you went to the butcher and you wore hat and gloves because it was a necessary thing to do because it might have been raining. So as a generation, that age group tends to wear hats and gloves for church. And for instance, my grandfather never saw me in a pair of jeans. I always put on a skirt to go and have tea with him just because he was of that generation, well, actually older. I wear gloves or I hold gloves when I'm going to Royal Ascot because that is, you know, a polite thing to do. But it's not mandatory now and everything's got much more relaxed. And I tend to wear, in a very old-fashioned sense, I tend to wear travelling clothes if I'm going on the train. But my children certainly don't. They're much more into tracksuits and jeans or chinos or whatever. It's a generational thing, but it's what I'm comfortable doing.
Absolutely. And you've always created your own style. So are there any memorable outfits that Her Majesty has worn through her monarchy that you've looked at and thought, that is absolutely one of my faves?
I mean, just so many. She just always nails it. She always gets it right. And she used to be dressed by Norman Hartnell. And now she's dressed by Angela Kelly, who is her assistant, but actually comes from Prescott and started off as her dresser. So Prescott is the local village here. And Angela's been to stay here when the Queen came to stay. And I was lucky enough to have a little chat with her and saw the Queen's clothes on the rail. And they were all in order with all the accessories of what she was going to wear for what engagement for the 3 days she was staying with us. And Angela Kelly, you know, designed the outfit that the Queen was wearing all the outfits she was wearing for the Jubilee. And she just makes it relevant and work for, you know, Her Majesty as she's got older, which is not easy looking, you know, completely fabulous when you're 96.
We forget, don't we, that she is 96. Mm. She makes age seem ageless. I think one of my favourites has to be the emerald green on the balcony at the end.
Yes.
That was just triumphant, wasn't it, in its colour?
Yes, so vibrant. Yeah.
So what has Queen Elizabeth II taught you about duty, Cassie?
Gosh, I don't think you ever stop learning. As I said earlier, you know, she carries duty so lightly. It's an innate part of any member of the royal family's character, really. They just don't complain about it. They understand that is what's expected. And however tired they are, they sort of pick themselves up and smile and hug and carry on doing whatever they were meant to be doing.
Yes, I've reflected on that a lot myself. And I think one of the things I'll take from this weekend will most definitely be the way in which she's embraced her entire family, that they should all be there to mark this moment. Mm. And I think in a changing worlds that we live in and changing family situations, that has to be one of the guardian batons that she's handed me from this magnificent weekend. And finally, if I may, Cassie, Queen Elizabeth II has spent her life leading our country, preserving our tradition, and guiding others. How has Queen Elizabeth's leadership influenced the way you lead your home as a custodian?
Well, I was lucky enough to work for Her Majesty for nearly 10 years. I was assistant surveyor of the Queen's pictures, so I probably have a sort of better immersion of how the Queen and then the Prince of Wales look after the royal collection as custodians, because it's an incredible collection and they really do look after it beautifully. The paintings are conserved, they're beautifully hung, whilst making it relevant to today's world. And that's what I've tried to do here, because when I came here, no money had been spent on the restoration of the pictures or the framing of them. You know, there was quite a lot of chip china, and it took me probably 20 years of a rolling programme to get the pictures conserved and reframed and rehung in the places where they were best. Because you are a custodian. They don't belong to you. And the important thing is to pass them on to the next generation and try and keep these great houses that we're lucky enough to live in for a short time or a long time, keep them together and the collection together.
And that you've answered in so many ways what so many conversations I have with ladies like you across the British Isles. It is that great sense of duty and custodianship that as women we have when we run these slices of British history. And you've learnt more from the top girl on the block than any of us. So we are inspired by you and what you've learnt from Her Majesty, and always guided by our Queen, Elizabeth II. And long may she live. God bless the Queen.
God bless the Queen.
What a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much, Lady Derby, for coming back to the show and sharing your time with us. Since we began Duchess the podcast, so many of you have reached out expressing the wish to make listening to Duchess a reality. We adore making this podcast, but we know nothing compares to experiencing these beautiful places for yourself. So, for people who want a once-in-a-lifetime experience, we partnered with the award-winning luxury travel company Abercrombie & Kent to bring our much-loved podcast to life. From guided tours, stays in grand rooms, fishing trips on the family lake, to private tours of beautiful gardens, our partnership with Abercrombie & Kent will enable you to experience Duchess, the podcast, for yourself from Inverary to Beaver and beyond. With Abercrombie & Kent, you can come and stay, visit and explore the houses that are featured in our series Duchess. Our partnership with Abercrombie and Kent will enable you to experience Duchess the podcast for yourself with your own tailor-made itinerary. For more information, visit abercrombiekent.co.uk/duchess. We'll put a link in the show notes. This is just a quick reminder that you're listening to Duchess, hosted by me, Emma Rutland, and this is a podcast produced by One Fine Play in collaboration with Beaver Castle. Over the course of Duchess, we have the joy of hearing so many fascinating and enchanting stories related to the Queen herself and her family. So now, let's have a listen to some of our favourite clips. To begin, let's look back to one of the first episodes of the podcast, where I travelled to the magnificent Blenheim Palace and met Lady Henrietta Spencer Churchill. In the clip, I ask her whether it was true that she could have become Queen one day herself, and Lady Henrietta reflects on a very special royal invitation. One of the things I will say to my three daughters, I've got five children, three old daughters come first, Violet, Alice and Eliza, is it's incredibly hard to find people who can be great role models, who've grown up in bits of British heritage as you have and my daughters have, and to take it all rather for granted. But you have to be, for me, that inspiration. And I think I've repeated this to you many a time, certainly to my daughters. If there's anyone you should mould yourself on, it is Lady Henrietta. Can you tell me, Henrietta, if you were going to speak to the First Duchess, if you were able to talk to her, what would you say?
Well, I'd probably be the other way around. What would she be telling me? She'd probably be saying... No, you should have done that differently, or you shouldn't have done that, or, you know, why didn't you marry into English aristocracy?
Another point. You could have been our queen, apparently, once upon a time.
Well, no, I don't think there was any chance of that. I don't think that... I did actually go and stay at Windsor once for Royal Ascot, which has to have been one of the most exciting times of my life, sitting in that carriage going up the race course. I mean, really was one of the highlights of my life.
Amazing.
But no, I wouldn't want that role. Thank you very much. So I think, you know, the fact that I didn't marry into aristocracy and I didn't have a big estate to help run is probably why I've stayed here and forged out a career locally, not only independently for myself with my interior design business, but actually also to help with some of the running of the estate, because it's, I think it's firstly important to maintain the family history, and secondly, it's my passion.
In the next clip, Lady Mansfield of Scone Palace speaks about the ancient stone throne that all British monarchs must take a seat on to become sovereign.
We call it the Stone of Scone. Yeah, it's an incredible story, and it was here for 500 years, and all the most famous Scottish kings, Malcolm Claymore, Macbeth, Robert the Bruce, were all crowned on the Stone of Scone at Scone. And so it's an incredibly historic site, and it's quite extraordinary that a private family still owns such an incredibly historic site. And a lot of the public still think, you know, it is owned by the state or by the National Trust, because it's so unusual.
Extraordinary. And if we were to have another King of Scotland, would they be crowned on that stone?
I think they would, like the Queen, and like Prince Charles will be crowned on the Stone of Scone when he becomes King.
In the same episode, Lady Mansfield also describes the origins behind the royal family's great love for Scotland.
And you have a great connection with Queen Victoria, I believe. Is that right?
In the fact that she came to visit in 1842 on one of her first, if not her first, tour of Scotland. Yes, we had 2 years' warning that she was coming. She writes about it in her diaries. It galvanised the Earl of the day to put in gas, to put in a new drive, and a bridge was put in, especially for Queen Victoria. A whole suite of rooms were made for her. And she stayed for one night. But that was all perfectly normal those days. I always say to people, thank God it wasn't Queen Elizabeth I, because that they really did completely cripple you if they came to stay.
How amazing. And she bought Balmoral as a result of falling in love with this part of the world. Is that right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Another of the very special conversations I've had throughout the journey of making this podcast was with AJ Devon of Powderham. AJ speaks on her admiration and connection with Meghan Markle, Duchess of Sussex.
There has been comparisons of you with Meghan Markle, I guess because of your acting background. Do you have sympathy for Meghan and everything that she's been through?
I have sympathy and empathy for any woman who has taken on such a challenge. But Meghan I knew way back for her work in Social Purpose. She'd caught my eye before, you know, anything happened. We grew up in the same valley and obviously we're in the same industry. But to be that young and that sure of herself and her purpose to connect and to heal was something I identified with very much. And you fall in love with this person. You know, I didn't fall in love with a castle. I didn't fall in love with an earl. I fell in love with his eyes and his smile and his heart and his mind. You know, I give the benefit of the doubt there that this woman has a purpose that was there before English royalty claimed her, to do good work with this life, to heal, to connect with people. And I believe that that is the motivation for the decisions that they've had to make. But, you know, again, it's not for me to project, but I do feel that I would definitely have her back.
Oh, well done you. And yeah. How far would she be from you in LA?
Oh, I don't know. She's probably not that far.
Oh, there you go. I hope she's listening and maybe I could come and interview her one day as well, because well done you for being so loyal and supportive to our kind.
One of my favourite things to ask guests on the podcast is about the mysterious bumps in the night that you can experience living in these old homes. In the next clip, you'll hear from Lady Ashcombe about the legend of Queen Catherine Parr, who is said to still walk Sudeley Castle to this day. So Sudeley has a wonderfully rich history, Could you give us a very brief history of the castle?
It dates back to about 900 AD, and it's been owned by so many different families, I couldn't count them on two hands. And curiously enough, the family that I belong to, the Dents and Brocklehurst family, have owned it longer than any other in the thousand-year history. And it's full of really the greatest celebrities of our history. I mean, it was owned by Henry VII and then Richard III, who built the Great Banqueting Hall. Then eventually the crown of Henry VIII and Anne Boleyn were here.
Goodness.
And then finally, our special lady here was Queen Catherine Parr, Henry's last and surviving wife, who fell in love with Thomas Seymour, whose property this was, had been granted to him by the king. And so we had the queen living here, but for a sadly short time.
And she is actually buried here?
And she's buried here in the church, yes.
How wonderful.
Yes.
And any other bit of her that strolls around?
Well, that's a good question, yeah. Some people have said that she returns. She had her only child, daughter, Mary, and then she died 5 days after giving birth to Mary. And nobody quite knows what the history of the daughter was, but it's assumed that she died when she was a child. So anyway, there's a myth, I think, that Catherine comes back searching for the soul of her lost daughter.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yeah, and it's a lovely one.
And where is she seen?
Well, she's been seen by visitors and housemaids. And when we did a documentary about the most haunted houses in England, and Sudley was chosen because of that, she was seen by the cameraman.
Late at night.
Yeah.
Drifting around. Yes.
I've never actually seen her, actually, though. So it's just...
Well, she's obviously incredibly proud of what you've done here, and so is just most probably giving you a gentle encouragement to carry on.
Well, the more one knows about her, the more one really loves her. She was the most beautiful and remarkable and pure and understanding and, I mean, quite modern and highly intelligent woman. And obviously had a very rough time, really.
Because he didn't have her finished off.
Well, he didn't, but I mean, he was horrible to her. I mean, you know, and he, in that stage of his life, was this gout-ridden, grumpy old man that was all for executing anybody who got in his way. But she survived it, and she was kind to him.
And so she was left with her head on her shoulders.
Also, always being in love with Thomas Seymour. They'd had a little bit of a fling before all this happened, so it's thought, anyway.
Perhaps the greatest honour you can receive as a custodian is a visit from the monarch. In the next clip, Lady Spencer of Althorp House speaks about the beautiful room that hosted Queen Mary.
And you have had, as we know, lots of connections with members of the royal family. But one of the extraordinary rooms is, I believe, Queen Mary's bedroom. Mm-hmm. Will you share with us that story?
I love that bedroom. It's so beautiful. It's got the most incredible, beautiful bed in it as well. Very beautiful, big canopy bed. She stayed in there. So it was a visit in 1913. So the sixth Earl was Lord Chamberlain to George V. And so they had separate bedrooms and he was staying opposite. So it's kind of a little suite, that the Queen Mary bedroom, then the King William bedroom was named the King William bedroom from a previous visit in the 1600s from King William. But the Queen Mary was from that 1913 visit most recently. And the King stayed next door. George V stayed next door in the King William bedroom. But it's a beautiful room and it does have a lot of needlepoint that Charles's grandfather needlepointed in that room, which I love as well.
How amazing. That's a wonderful story.
One of my absolute favourite stories about the royal family that has been featured on the podcast came from my conversation with Countess Bathurst at Cirencester Park. In the clip, you'll hear the amusing tale when the Earl of Bathurst chased Prince William down the drive.
So staying on the ground, Cirencester has a very royal and proud history.
Yes.
To do with polo.
Yeah.
Could you tell us a little bit about this?
Well, the polo club has been going since 1894. It stopped during the war, but was bought back by my husband's uncle George. It's just a really beautiful polo club. Ivy Lodge Grounds is well known to be the best polo grounds in the country, possibly the world. This is wonderful Cotswold brash, you see, it drains, keeps enough moisture to make it like velvet. velvet, but then it doesn't get too soggy.
So you must have had some amazing members of the royal family come to play polo here.
Yes, we have. Going right back in time, the Duke of Windsor played here a lot. And then going on, we've obviously, His Royal Highness the Prince of Wales has played here a lot and loves it. And so have Princess William and Prince Harry. But we've also had the Maharaj of Jaipur and the Sultan of Brunei. We've had some amazing people playing here.
And any wonderful stories that you can share with our listeners about the royals and anything funny that's come across?
Oh, my father-in-law did have a bit of a, well, actually, I think it was probably well covered in the press, actually. Prince William was wanting to get home, I think, rather quickly one day and drove a little too fast down the exit road. And my father-in-law took particular exception to that, didn't care who he was and stopped him, but then was surrounded by his PPOs and it sort of all got sort of a bit awkward. But Henry didn't care. I think he said, I thought it was just some oik, which always rather creased me because I thought that's not an oik as William. But they were very sweet about it. And I think that he realised that probably wasn't the thing to do. But Henry was, he had his photograph taken the next day in his pyjamas and dressing gown, standing by his white Land Rover Discovery, looking very pleased with himself. I just thought the whole thing was very funny indeed.
Oh, how hysterical. Our Prince William story, and it's lovely if you are lucky enough to meet the royals in person, because yes, you realise how incredibly grounded and
they are wonderful
and so devoted to the roles that they do. And I'm sure there's no question from any of our listeners to that.
Yes.
But we had a shoot on the Beaver Estate, and one day some people were arriving in a helicopter, and we'd no idea who they were. But just before they arrived, some two burly men in black suits and looking as if they've got sort of holsters around their waists came into the kitchen where my once was nanny, who then became the cook on the shoot, who was one of those nannies that absolutely got our children sorted. She tamed these baby lions for me. And she was in cooking roast pork for the lunch and preparing, you know, sausage rolls before they went out. And Phil came into the kitchen and said, Caroline, I hope you've got the roast going because you've got Prince William joining us today. And she said, why don't you off? I'm the queen. In came Fantastic. Prince William, and he spent the entire day, which is magical, jumped into Phil's filthy truck with him and went round the entire shoot all day and was so interested, so knowledgeable, and actually, you know, a joy to have with us. And so yes, if we've had royal stories, they sort of will be written up in our archives.
I know, I'm sure they would.
In the same episode, you'll also hear Countess Bathurst speak about the beautiful gardens of Highgrove. What is the secret, do you feel, of a great British garden?
The secret of a great British garden. I'll tell you exactly what the secret to a great British garden is that it brings its owner happiness. So a garden can bring happiness to somebody if it's got nothing in it. I mean, one of the most beautiful gardens I have ever been to is at Highgrove. Every corner you walk around, there is something extraordinary there. And it is done with complete love and passion by the Prince of Wales. And it brings him happiness. So that is a beautiful garden. Our garden is beautiful because I can walk up it with the dogs and just think of the history and look back at the house. That brings me happiness. The secret to me of a good garden is the happiness it brings its owner.
In our penultimate clip, we go to Blair Castle's Sarah Troughton, who speaks about the proud tradition of the Athol Highlanders and how Queen Victoria made them the last private army in Europe.
So what are the Athol Highlanders and how did they come to be?
Well, the first incarnation of the Athol Highlanders was they were a regular army in the British Army, and they were put together to go and fight in America. In fact, they only got as far as Ireland, and then they were going to be sent to India, not America, and actually they mutinied, and they were disbanded. But that was part of the regular army. Then, about 100 years later, 1844, Queen Victoria and Prince Albert came to stay at the castle. They were friends of the 6th Duke and his wife, Duchess Anne, and they needed somewhere very quiet to stay while Queen Victoria recuperated from the birth of her second child. And they wanted the stay to be completely private, They didn't want to be bothered by any sort of duties or social life. And the men of Athol, which were a mixture of the keepers and anyone who really worked on the estate, they were put to guarding the castle. The Duke and his Duchess went and lived in a nearby factor's house. And the castle was just guarded by these men, and they apparently had a very peaceful time, and they enjoyed themselves a lot. And when they left, Queen Victoria said, "I must reward the Duke for this time." So the following year, she sent two of her family, I think, down to Athol to present her colours to the Duke. This means, having received the colours from Queen Victoria, it grants him the right to bear arms. So his force of men became a regiment with the right to bear arms, and that is what's so unique about them. I don't think there's another private regiment, certainly not another one in Britain, and I don't think there's another one in Europe that have the right to bear arms. And to this day, they still parade. They do fire a cannon at their parade. They don't fire in anger.
Our final clip will come from an upcoming episode recorded with Viscountess Gage at Firle Place.
Describe the Cairnstone. Is there a quarry nearby?
No, so the Cairnstone is actually from France. And so there's not a quarry nearby, but it was bought over to build the monastery in Lewes. And when the monasteries were pulled down, which actually was part of Sir John's timing with Henry VIII during the dissolution of the monasteries, he quickly nabbed some of that Caen stone. So it's the Normandy Caen, C-A-E-N. So that's part of this sort of French feel that the house does have. And so the transformation of Firle from a Tudor manor to the Georgian home, yeah, so happened with Sir William Gage in the early 18th century and was completed by the first Viscount Gage. Since that time, it's remarkably unaltered. I think the only alteration on the outside was about 10 years ago. I put a door in the kitchen, in the family kitchen, which allowed us to get out onto the south lawn without going through the Great Hall, which is open to the public 4 or 5 months a year, which meant that we would have to sort of trundle through various guides and various tours. So apart from that, it's remains very, very much unchanged. I think I'm right here that Prince Philip used to call it the prettiest small house he knew. He used to come and stay for he used to carriage drive at a local house called Stamber Park. And so for many years, he came to stay every year. He brought a very nice perception of the house with him in describing it as that.
Well, he'd been to quite a few, I would imagine, so he would know. How lovely.
Well, my dear listeners, I hope you've enjoyed my wonderful conversations with Lady Derby and that brief trip down memory lane. In 1952, the Princess of York became Queen Elizabeth II after the sudden death of her father. She became the sovereign at a time of great global, political, and economic uncertainty, a time not unlike our own right now, but throughout her 70-year reign, where she has seen the world change many times over, Queen Elizabeth has exemplified an unmatched sense of duty and love. More than anything else, she has been an empowering figure for leadership and dignity that every woman and girl can look up to. Queen Elizabeth II is now the longest reigning monarch in British history. She is the matriarch of Great Britain and the Commonwealth. In ever-changing and uncertain times, she has been a symbol of permanence. So this is to you, Your Royal Highness, for all you have done and all you continue to do. Thank you to our listeners. This has been Duchess. So next week on the podcast, I speak to Lady Gage of the beautiful Firle Place. In the episode, Lady Gage explains the history behind one of England's most admired art collections. I learn about the eclectic female poet who became a central figure in Christian mysticism. And we discuss why Firle Place is considered by many to be one of the prettiest little houses you'll ever see. Until then. With Her Majesty the Queen's Platinum Jubilee this year, we want to mark this momentous occasion by celebrating women in public service and heritage today. Join me, Emma Rutland, and my dear friend, Nicholas Coleridge, CBE, Chairman of the Victoria and Albert Museum and former President of Condé Nast, at Beaver Castle on the 30th of June for a live Q&A with some of my previous guests on Duchess, celebrating the Queen's Platinum Jubilee and the third series of Duchess. The Q&A will be followed by a scrumptious lunch in the state dining room at my very own Beaver Castle, where you can meet the incredible women who've inspired and appeared on Duchess. You will also have the opportunity to tour the castle and gardens for free. Hurry, there is only 100 tickets on sale for this exclusive event. You can find more information about this event on our website, www.duchessthepodcast.com. I very much look forward to welcoming you to Beaver very soon. With summer approaching and spring in full swing, picnics and walks in Bluebell Woods can return. We've been busy designing a range of high-quality, sustainable products perfect for taking on your picnic this summer. Handmade in the UK and designed by me, our products are helping to diminish the use of single-use plastics and bringing you elegant, sustainable alternatives. To view our range of gorgeous products, go to our website www.duchessthepodcast.com or through our Instagram account at Duchess the Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. There are just a few quick notes before we go. Make sure you follow Duchess wherever you listen to podcasts. One of my favourite things about the podcast is learning more about you and hearing your stories. So please write to me, tell me about your own lineage, and share with me the women who've inspired you in your life at duchessthepodcast.com. You've been listening to Duchess, the podcast presented by me, Emma Rutland, the Duchess of Rutland, produced by One Fine Play in collaboration with Beaver Castle. From One Fine Play, James Bishop is the executive producer, Kasra Ferruzia is the editor and audio-visual engineer, Connor Foley is the producer and researcher, additional creative support from Selena Christofides. Lady Violet Manners, my daughter, is executive producer with additional support from Henry Merrick. Thank you so much for listening to Duchess.